You are now checked in to Stand Up New York Labs. Oh, yeah.
It's time for the End of Conversation podcast with funny man Damian Lemon. Crazy is Dominican, you know, Vladimir, come on, yo. My cool man from the county of Dade, Ali Muhammad.
Yeah, aha, we are back. Yes, y'all. Damian Lemon on my right here. So, oh, wait a minute. This is In the Conversation. I'm sorry. I ain't even titled that, motherfucker. This is In the Conversation. I'm Damian Lemon on my right hand side.
El profesor Vladimir Camaño.
Oh, shit. This motherfucker that way.
Oh, man. This is Ali Muhammad in the building.
On my left hand side.
Y'all. I'm jumping the gun. This is Ali.
I ain't that, man.
Muhammad.
We in the conversation, man. How we doing?
We doing good, man.
Everything good, man.
Been good. Gotta clean my glasses, though, D.
Wow, what's going on?
Gotta get new lenses, man. At that point, where they just look dirty. That's the first thing people say, too, is like, dude ain't cleaning his lenses.
Really? Have you had that?
I've noticed that. I've done a couple tapings, and I'm like, ooh, glasses are dirty.
But has anybody ever come up to you and say, yo, Pop, what's
going on? One drunk white woman.
She was a glasses wearer, I would imagine.
You can't really see it from when you close. There's one drunk woman's like, your glasses are dirty. I work for an optometrist office.
Okay.
And I said, what's up with the deal? And then she walked away. So.
Interesting. Man.
That's what I'm going to do. I clean my glasses. That's my TMI moment for the day.
Well, it's getting better. It's not as cringeworthy.
I've been going to sessions, guys. I've been trying to get it taken care of.
All right.
Clean your glasses, man.
Clean your glasses, yeah.
All right, no doubt.
T-shirt wiping working no more.
Oh, shit.
You ever think about LASIKs?
You know, I did think about that, man. I was pricing out the budget to do that, to get that done.
How much is that?
It depends on the. It's funny because Ali, good point. They do have these living social deals. I don't trust my eyes to a coupon.
Nah, son.
You know what I mean?
Nah.
Miss Info did it.
Yeah, she did. A few people did it over there, and then Hannibal did it. He said that shit changed his life.
Are you serious?
It's a whole new fucking world. It changed his life.
His crowd work game is another
you can
level
see
now.
Motherfuckers in the back.
That's what I'm saying. Exactly. Yeah, I see you in the back.
You
out
see
there.
The light. Oh, okay. Nah. He definitely got it. And my thing is, so that's laser tearing your what's going on.
As I understand it, they reshape your cornea. They reshape it the way it accepts light, which allows you to get better, more accurate vision.
Interesting.
So right. I was actually thinking about that, Ali. Yeah, I was looking into that.
You scared?
I mean, the stats are pretty consistent. This is a small risk, obviously, but
But let's talk about you. What's the?
I've identified with my glasses. That's the other part too. There's a part of my identity. You know,
you do have that. Yeah.
You know, you got that.
You feel smart. With
yeah,
shit.
You know, you got that. Fix my Wi-Fi. Look, you know, you got
professor.
That. Professor.
You'd be a common thug after you take.
I know.
I'll
be regular. You know what I mean?
Definitely gonna be more police stops.
Regular.
Oh, you know what I mean?
you seeing the glasses don't keep me under. They don't.
Yeah.
I don't get profiled.
And you might not get swung on as immediately.
Right.
Nobody ever wants to hit a guy with glasses. That your world star appearance rate will significantly, the potential for you to be on the world star video will probably significantly go up if you take them glasses
off. D, you should be a consultant for how not to get
for
got.
Hood anxieties. Exactly.
Yeah, hood anxieties. Yeah, how not to get got.
Exactly.
I'm going to have to carry a pair of glasses on me.
Just in case. Just in case shit gets tense.
No doubt. People treat you different with glasses.
That's a good point.
And I never wore glasses, but I did conduct the experiment one time. Had a pair of just glasses laying around the office and just rocked them out in the streets. People spoke to me more.
Yeah.
People don't speak, you know what I'm saying? They don't just speak on the regular, like, hey, good morning. They don't say that shit to me. But
you look like you had something to say.
You know what I'm saying?
That's what it looked like. I guess
it looked more friendly, more approachable.
When you put the glasses on, though,
I said, fuck that shit. Went back to my regular self.
But then the other thing is the sunglasses. Now that's a whole different
antisocial thug.
That's the antisocial where you got the sunglasses on indoors. That's either you super antisocial, either you an artist or a wannabe artist, or you might be a weed head and you might be a little high right now. That's why you gotta keep your shades on at the funeral.
Some people have they have struggled with eye contact and conversation. It makes them uncomfortable, so they wear sunglasses. I've had a few friends like that.
Yeah, because they hiding at that point. They're challenging themselves.
Yeah,
they hiding.
Eye contact makes them uncomfortable, so they put the.
But check this out. But that's that. But you know that becomes a good device too, because that shows. Listen, I'm about to get intimate, and I'm gonna tell you where I saw that at.
Oh, you put take them off to for effect?
I was watching the Damon Dash interview.
Oh, here we go.
Oh, here we go. With the Breakfast Club. Let's get it started. Right. All right.
Ooh, that segue was no look. No look. Anyway, if you're going to do a no look segue, you can't talk about how it was a no look segue. You just got to segue.
That was a great segue.
Anyway, but there's a point in the interview where he calls out Spike Lee for not really supporting him.
Right.
Now, he was turned up until that point, you know what I mean? Stunting with the shades on, and then he had to make an appeal to the people, mm-hmm. you know, get the people on his side.
Right.
And he definitely deliberately took off his shades, and he looked into the camera and he said, listen, I just want to understand why a black man, you know what I mean? This turned into a black man. It wasn't a boss. It wasn't an employee.
Right.
It was a black man. I just want to know why when I came and asked for help, you felt as if I was arrogant.
Right.
You know, but
his poll ratings went up by 10 points.
I mean, what did you guys think of that interview with Dame Dash and the Breakfast Club?
I said it was a TED Talk wrapped up in shit talk. It was... It was fucking amazing if you knew how to pick through it.
No doubt.
I got a little annoyed that they pulled sound bites of the interview without giving it the full context, because everybody just pointed to that one scene, that one moment where he was yelling at Envy.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it's important to get the context that the interview opened up with him asking about Jay.
Well, I didn't see that. I saw the interview in its entirety.
A lot of guys just took the sound bite.
Right. But that was the sound bite to take if you were going to take one.
But I think Dame walked into it after they questioned him about Jay. He got fired up on that. He was like, I don't want to talk about that. And they kept pressing him on it.
Right.
And I think that bled into him getting loud later on.
Well, I mean, yeah, it did agitate the situation. But at the same time, that philosophy, you know, Dame has never, you know what I'm saying, strayed away from that philosophy, you know what I'm saying, of putting his money into his businesses and not working for nobody and not being corporate and controlling your own situation. That's been his philosophy through and through, and he's never, you know what I'm saying, veered from that. You know what I'm saying? Even when they had him in the press as losing money and being foreclosed on, he still stood true to that philosophy.
CEO.
You know what I'm saying? So for me, you know what I'm saying, it's just something, it just seems like, you know, you see the responses, you know what I mean, and social media of people talking about, you know, how they felt about what he said about being a boss and having a job.
Yeah. I think Cass was
taken aback.
They were taken aback because the sanctity of the 9-to-5 was under attack. You understand? And I don't think it really – I think it was clearly a thing of two different perspectives. Mm-hmm. I think it was one of those interviews where you had to watch it at least twice, you know, because you could have an emotional reaction immediately depending on what side of the coin you are. If you're somebody that works for someone or someone that works for themselves, either a boss or a person with a 9-to-5, you could have taken issue to the way there was some, I mean, you know, Dame is always good for some inflammatory words and shit.
Right.
One of the quotables I saw that I thought was crazy was calling a man boss is like calling a man daddy. That's OD right there, Bob. That is OD.
But see, the thing about it is, you know what I'm saying, it's not Dame's responsibility to present fairness.
No doubt.
Love and fairness and sharing is caring and cooperative.
He's got a campaign.
He had a campaign. He had his point of view, and he was on a mission to, you know, represent his point of view through and through fully.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? And whether you fall on one side or the other, you know what I'm saying? It was kind of true.
There was an interesting moment.
Nah. Listen, I think that I don't want to say, I can never say that. If you got a boss, that's like calling somebody daddy. That's a whole lot. I work for myself. You work for yourself.
Right,
you
know, but I've had a job.
Everybody, and I think some of the best training to be a boss is a job. You know what I mean? I think to say, calling somebody who you call a boss is like calling somebody a daddy. That's an extreme way of saying that you're dependent on somebody, right?
But you kind of are.
No,
if that motherfucker come in to work that day and say, you know what, this is not working out.
True indeed, but nobody,
you got to go.
Nobody is wholly independent. Everybody has to work in tandem with someone.
Exactly.
You know?
But wait, I think his position was just that, you know what I'm saying, when your whole situation is dependent upon your work situation, then it leaves you vulnerable.
Yeah.
But he said it harshly.
No, exactly. But what I'm trying to say is, like, I'm all about working for myself. You know what I mean? Like, I've had a job, and I understand that, you know, I wouldn't want to have to work for anybody at this point in my life. You know what I mean? And that's a luxury on a certain level. It's something that you got to work hard to establish. And then if you could get your own business up off the ground and maintain it, you know, that it comes, it's a lot. I won't say it's a luxury. It's a lot of fucking hard work. And it's a changing of your perspective to the point where you got to look, I don't want to say look down on having a job, but to work for yourself is kind of like, I'm going to go all in. This is my A game. And if this is my plan A, there is no plan B. So there is no entertaining that talk.
Exactly.
You know what I mean? Like, it is something seductive about the thought of security. You know what I mean? But I feel like what the 2007 recession taught people was that security is a myth in itself. Because you can be let go just because you don't fit within the margin. You've been a great fucking employee for years and all of that, but we gotta let you go.
Right.
You know what I mean? However, at the same time, if you work for someone and your clients aren't clicking, they ain't calling no more, they're not cutting any checks, it's going to be a bit of a crisis.
It's one of those
relationships that are dependent on one another. The thing is, I think this is where the perspective switches, though. It's like, whereas somebody with a job is like, damn, I need another job. Who's hiring? Where somebody works for themselves is like, damn, I need to make some money. What can I do? It's like, it's really that, just that departure. But I don't feel like, you know, Dame is, his shit talking is like Rucker Park legendary.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right.
So for him to say some slick shit like that, that's apropos of Dame Dash.
But
that's what he is. That's what he does.
And if it wasn't presented in that type of way, we wouldn't be having this conversation.
That's true.
You understand? If it was fair and balanced, in its truth, then we wouldn't have nothing to talk about.
So when, let me ask you a question. We had a boss, when you used to say, hey, boss man.
Well, not I never even say, hey, boss man.
Because that sounds crazy. But when you used to say, when you used to speak to your boss, when they say, when they give you like a review or something, they say, this is what I want you to do, blah, blah, blah. Did you ever feel like you say, damn, daddy, thank you for this information?
Nah, but I know I did feel like.
Daddy, thank you.
I did feel like every time, you know, I walked in that office, I felt like this shit ain't mine. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I felt like, shit, I need to, you know what I'm saying? I need, from my first real job, mm-hmm. was that Vibe.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So when I got on there, the guy who hired me left like 6 months after, like 3 months after I got there.
Uh-huh.
So the whole plot from my fourth month to my eighth month was them trying to get as much information out of me before they pushed me out the door, because they thought I was going to leave with the other guy.
Mm-hmm.
So every day I thought, damn, this is the day that they going to fucking fire me.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when I started 21st Century Hustle.
Mm-hmm.
Because it was in my thought process was, well, shit, I need to get back to my, you know what I'm saying, original thinking, which is how can I build my own shit? And so I started it, and that let me feel free. That let me feel free enough. And then when my job was more secure, when they saw my value or whatever, you know what I'm saying? I just ran, you know what I'm saying, my business and my job parallel. And I learned a lot, but you know what I'm saying? And I was comfortable, I was secure, but at the same time, I never bought into it, because that's not where I came up and that's not where I came in.
But then what about when you had to do 21st Century Hustle
exclusively?
How was that?
What you mean?
Like how, like when
as
you
as far as the first jump off or just the process of doing it?
The first jump off and the process.
When you first jump out, you're just like, shit, I'm motherfucking free. I'm free. I'm going to do my shit. And then, you know, then you had to deal with, you know, the shit that come with it. And I've been through that. The only difference was this time when I started it just alone by myself, it wasn't like my other businesses. I had a house. I had two kids and one on the way. You know what I'm saying? So it was a different ball game. So the stakes was way higher. And it felt nervous. You know what I'm saying? It felt scary. But at no point did I, you know what I'm saying, did I say, you know what, man, fuck this shit, man. I'm going to go get another job. You know what I'm saying? I just fought through it because I know the rewards of putting in the work. You know what I'm saying? I know the value of being able to be free enough to do whatever I do, wherever I want to do it, to hold my conference call in the car waiting on my son to get out of school. You know what I'm saying? I know the value of all that shit. So, you know what I'm saying? That was worth more to me than the security because I could go get my own.
But talk about that a little bit more. Like, even, like, that was just a glimpse. Like, holding the conference call in the car while you're waiting on your son. But, like, talk about that anxiety. Talk about how it could be to, like, talk about, and maybe this isn't you, but if it is, talk about just some of the uncomfortable moments of having to be your own boss.
I mean, the most uncomfortable moment for me is, you know what I'm saying, having the real boss at the house, which is my wife, you know what I'm saying, who I got to answer to as far as, you know what I'm saying, holding shit down, you know what I'm saying, my kids, my family, you know what I'm saying. That's the most uncomfortable part is when shit ain't right or shit ain't where you want it to be and it ain't enough at that very moment. That's the most uncomfortable part because you got to wake up and look at everybody else who looking at you like, what you going to do? You know what I'm saying? They looking at you like daddy because yeah. That's what you are. And you got to provide the security and you got to provide the shit. So that just keep you up at night. You know what I'm saying? That's part of the problem solving. And that's the part that fuels you. You know what I'm saying? That's the part that, because once you figure it out, the reward is greater than the fear. You know what I'm saying? The reward is better than that anxiety. You know what I'm saying? And then once you've been through it and you've been around the track a few times, then you know not to worry, you know what I'm saying, when shit get low, because you know you've been putting in the work. You know what I'm saying? You've been running your angles and you know where shit coming from. You know what I'm saying? So, but it's tough because you had to fix your mind to deal with that and to be able to block that shit out and say, okay, all this shit that's coming at me from all different directions, I can't see that right now because I got to get to this.
Right.
And I have to get this done and I can't waver and I can't falter because if I do, then all this shit fall down. You know what I'm saying?
It's typically when you turn to God.
But if you're doing this, God is in your thoughts every step of the way. You know what I'm saying? If you're that type of person, you know what I'm saying? Because you're not, everybody say I'm doing this on my own, self-made and all that type of shit. But again, like you said, you definitely got to work with, you got to build and you got to work with other people. You got to do, you know what I'm saying? Collaborate, cooperate. But at the same time, you don't just make all your thoughts up. You know what I'm saying? They come from inspiration. You know what I'm saying? So it's a direct line all down there all day. You know what I'm saying? Okay. You know what I'm saying? Because when you are the boss, that shit is a lonely-ass job. You know what I'm saying? Nobody want to hear none of that shit what you got to complain about. You know what I'm saying? You got to deliver. So it's going to be a lot of introspection. You know what I'm saying? A lot of God talk.
Yeah.
A lot of, you know what I'm saying? Shit, I need, what can we do right here?
You know, my friend Royale, we were talking about this weekend,
mm-hmm.
how you have a destination, but you don't know the how.
Mm-hmm.
The how gets figured out if you keep putting in that investment in that time. Like, the little pieces start to fall into place if you keep putting in that effort.
Yeah, you just
we get so caught up in figuring out what the pieces are going to be,
mm-hmm.
but your only focus should be putting in, being proactive and putting in the effort.
Let me ask you a question. Now, you have a 9-to-5.
I don't have 9-to-5.
No?
No.
7-to-3?
10-to-6? I do part-time IT work.
Okay.
It's not full-time, though.
Do you have a job?
I do have a job, two jobs.
How did you feel about the Dame Dash interview, the boss versus the man with the job?
I think it's important to separate the speaker from the message.
Okay.
I think Dame, it could be a little inflammatory, and people get caught, they get distracted by who's saying it versus what he's saying.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
What he's saying is, you know, nothing new. It's like you have to own the means of production, which is what capitalism is.
Mm-hmm.
You own the means of production, you make the profit, bottom line. So I agree with what Dame was saying. There was an interesting point, though. And Dame kind of sidestepped it. Envy asked him, how did you pay for the studio time
mm-hmm.
when you first started out?
Mm-hmm.
And Damien kind of checked him and redirected it. You know, he didn't answer that question directly outright. Because I think what Envy was trying to get to was, how do you get the capital, the investment capital?
I think he said as much as he could say right. without incriminating himself.
Or destroying the message with without sidetracking the message. You know what I'm saying? Because if you say, we were selling dope, which everybody already know the story.
Correct.
Jay-Z was on the cover of Forbes talking about how much dope he sold. You know what I'm saying? So,
so
it's kind of like, again, Envy going back to questions that everybody already know.
So I think Envy, it's funny because the way Dame stepped into the plate, it becomes an interview of looking for contradictions because he's so big, because Dame is so big, so people start looking for contradictions in him, which shouldn't be the case. Try to cut him down. They try to look for.
I got a theory on that, but I want to get back to the original point that you, as a person that has a job, right? What did you feel about Dame's position on that? What do you feel about this whole calling your boss daddy? What do you think about that?
Like, you're being quite inflammatory.
I'm replaying.
Your boss your daddy?
What I'm saying is, there's two sides to the coin. We talked about you. You own, you know what I mean? You work for yourself. I want to talk to you. You know what I mean? You work for someone else, right? What do you feel? How do you feel about that? How do you define yourself by that? How did you feel about that? You know, all of that type of thing.
I think for me, it's like, you know, I don't know which one you guys said it, but like, you know, Envy made a good point too. Like, I see both sides of the fence. Envy was basically saying that he was working in this radio station based on certain terms. Mm-hmm. I enjoy working here. Mm-hmm. I do IT work part time, and I'm able to work remotely. Mm-hmm. I get certain benefits that I can use when I'm on the road doing comedy. Mm-hmm. So it works for me based on my terms, based on my schedule. So I'm agreeing to work for somebody else because it works based on what I'm trying to do.
Right. Do you want to do comedy full time, or do you?
I'm doing it full time,
but full time with no job. The security, your job will be comedy, where everything that you do, everything comedy related, is what will
pay you.
Pay you. That would be your income. Your sole income will be comedy.
Yeah, I'm gonna keep 100. I mean, I could technically do that now if I wanted to. Uh-huh. I could just take the leap and do it.
Okay.
You know, I've cut down a lot of expenses. But I kind of enjoy my boss, quote unquote. He's a cool dude. He's taught me a lot about business. He's actually helped my comedy out in terms of the way I navigate it, in terms of like what platforms am I using. Mm-hmm. And he has his own business. So I've learned from him about how to navigate a business. Mm-hmm. I've learned how to set up different retirement accounts. I learned about index funds. I learned about Salesforce.
Do you think you wouldn't have that same relationship with him if you didn't work for him?
Absolutely. I mean, no. I mean, I wouldn't have that. I mean, but I know it's the kind of thing that when I do leave, he's still aligned for me. I can still call him up and be like,
"So you can still have that relationship?"
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. He trusts me with a lot of stuff though too. I see, like, I've seen the ins and outs of the business.
Yeah.
So we have conversations about what to do in certain situations based on intimate knowledge of the organization. Mm-hmm. You know, people going on strike, people going, you know, different things.
What do you think he'll think if you go in tomorrow and say you're leaving?
If I told him that?
Yeah.
He'd probably be like, "Hey, listen, can we get a transition period? Like, how much time do you need to leave?" That'd be the conversation.
Let me ask you, what do you see more security in, comedy or where you work at?
Comedy.
Okay.
But I will say this, though, about Dame. And I think people got to separate the speaker from the message. Dame is really particular about language. Mm-hmm. He likes speaking in a way that does not communicate coming from a deficit. So people get caught up in that. When he says boss.
Because he's trying to be a boss.
If you see what Dame did, though, instead of boss, he'll say partnership. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Which I think is so ill, because now when people interact with you, it's almost like they're interacting with a different person. Mm-hmm. Language is dope, is important, dude. If you start talking from a place of deficit, like, "Oh, that's my boss," mm-hmm. as opposed to being like, "That's my partner."
Yeah. Right, but
it phrases the whole thing.
But it's two different things. It's not. It's not the same thing. If he's your partner, he's not your boss.
Yeah, both have the same amount.
You
to
have
lose.
Equity in it. You know what I'm saying? You both have equity stakes.
I guess what I'm saying is, like, language makes distinctions, right? I mean, Damien and I had a situation this week at the Comedy Cellar, right?
Yeah.
Somebody walked into the Comedy Cellar. That's a big deal.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
He's a lion in the game. He's like the Michael Jordan.
Who?
Nori Davis walked into the Comedy Cellar, and the crowd went, wow.
Shout out to Nori Davis.
You know, Dean, I was saying that, he sat with a mutual friend, mm-hmm. and I decided not to go over there because mm-hmm. of said person was there. But that's only because of the language I'm using in my head. I'm using language in my head that makes this person, you know, the big stuff, the big deal.
Right.
Whereas if you use language like Dame says, and, you know, the way Dame talks, that person becomes just another person. He's a peer. He's a human being. Right. Granted, I respect his work, but there's no reason why I can't join the table and have a conversation.
No doubt. And that's something, that's a mindset, you know what
that's
I'm saying?
That's language.
But at the same time, is when you're talking about business and partnerships, it's not just language. That shit is law. You know what I'm saying? That is how you establishing the legalities of your working relationship. You know what I'm saying? So an employee contract and a partnership agreement is two totally different things, no matter how you, if you say it in different languages, or if me and D do something together and we say we partners, you know what I'm saying? It don't mean shit until we put it down in writing and make it right. and make it do what it do, and we both sharing in the equity. Because a lot of people throw language at you to throw you off as well. Hey, let's partner up on some shit. And then really when you get to the situation, is they want you to build their shit for them. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? So that's not a partnership. You know what I'm saying? That's an indentured servitude. You know what I mean? Shit like that.
But what if someone walks into a situation like that, but they don't have the language for that? You see what I'm saying? Like Dame, in some ways, Dame educated a lot of people by introducing those words to people.
No doubt.
And like stop using boss, use X.
And I think that was the most important part right. of the conversation is that it puts the thought out there so we can have these conversations. Right. And I think, you know, there's two parts that I thought were very interesting. You mm-hmm. know what I'm saying? When he called envy selfish. Mm-hmm. And he said, you know what I'm saying, you hustle for your first name.
I hustle for my last name.
That shit was dope.
That's the newest hot shit, so I had to tweet that. I was like, I've been saying this all 24 you know hours.
Because when you thinking about your legacy, when you're thinking about your kids and your kids' kids, you know what I'm saying, you're not operating from yourself. You know what I'm saying? You're operating with everybody in mind, everybody that you got rolling with you that you are responsible for, your lineage, you have that on your back. Mm-hmm. And that's how you thinking, and that's how you setting yourself up, and that's how you doing your deals, and that's how you moving. And I think that was important to say. And also, you know what I'm saying, enjoy his moment in proud fatherhood. He's mm-hmm. like, my son got cookies.
Yeah, he brought them out.
You know what I'm mm-hmm. saying?
He got a place called Buns.
My son got a restaurant called Buns. At the Pause. I love that your father paused after he
got
just
cookies.
Shouted out your restaurant.
That was a comedic moment, though. Like, you said Buns, but he said Buns. My son got a restaurant, Buns, in Meadowlands.
Nah, the funniest part of the whole shit is when they got heated, when it looked as if, I guess Envy felt that Dame, because Dame said, yo, investment sounds smart to dumb people. And then Envy said something like, you sound stupid. And he was like, hold on, don't say I sound stupid. And Envy was like, well, you said I sound stupid. He was like, oh, if I said you sound stupid, I'm sorry. Did I say you sound stupid? Oh, I'm sorry. That shit was hilarious, dog.
Yeah, I think Envy was just flustered at that point. He was just trying to, he was compensating. He was overcompensating for the conversation and trying to.
He opened up with the Jay-Z bit, which I think took it in the wrong direction. It took it in a whole other direction.
I mean, that was the whole plan of having him there anyway. That's the only reason they had him up there, because he has said the stuff about Jay in the other interview.
Yeah, yeah.
So who wants, they want the Jew.
Well, the whole point to have him up there was, well, it depends on who we talking to. I guess for them it would be
for
that.
Them, yeah.
But for him it was Losadas, the movie he's trying
exactly.
to
exactly, but right? for him, he's been doing this long enough mm-hmm. to know to control the mic.
Yeah.
I mean, it'd be no Rockefeller if Dame Dash wasn't snatching mics and letting Jay-Z rock. You know what I'm saying? So he understands the power. He took all the power away from the Black Breakfast Club in that particular interview.
It was a good one. It was a good one. It was filled with quotables. You know what I mean? Definitely has to be some great moments, man. It was, you know, it still makes the conversation continue. I thought that shit was good.
And anytime you got dudes or people in a public environment like that, it becomes theater.
Well,
it's
yeah,
always. I mean, that's
it becomes theater.
Radio is theater.
Yeah, it's
theater.
It's entertainment.
Anyway.
It's shocking to me how people get caught up in like these inflammatory Facebook posts about how Dame was saying it, how Envy, how he dissed Dame. And I was like, yo, this is theater. Like, just listen to what
the
man was saying.
But that's what the conversation is about.
No, but just like it just kills me how people can't see beyond the spectacle. Like, did you hear what Dame said? Like, focus on that. Stop getting caught up in who yelled at who.
But you know.
You know what I mean? Like, people, it's like so distracting. Like, Dame was making some good points.
Right, but everybody got their own point they want
to
make.
I can't listen to him because the way
he talked. You wouldn't be talking about it if it wasn't a spectacle.
Right.
You know what I mean? That's like part of what made it like newsworthy, what made people share it, what made the conversation go. It wasn't a bland interview right. where just somebody was saying, this is what I do, this is how right. I believe. It was spirited conversation, and it definitely had some real point of views and some polarizing thoughts.
A lot of jabs.
Yeah. It was a good one.
Can your son take money out the bank from this company?
It was interesting.
Nope.
It
was interesting, man.
I enjoyed it. I mean, I've watched most of Dame's pieces online, where he sits down and he talks with his friends. I watch all his videos. I got Dame's T-shirt at home, the CEO. I got that, you know, at home. I've been by Poppington, mm-hmm. so.
What was up with Charlamagne wearing a Jay-Z hat and T-shirt? I got to ask that man is, when I see him. That was that trolling in real life?
It was trolling in real life.
Ah.
And he Dame called him. He like, you got the hat on, you call over there and ask him.
Which sounded super paranoid to nobody that didn't know anything about. Because my grandmother was like, what's the hat? What's
Your grandma watched it.
Yeah, that's how big it got. I went to my grandmother's house, kicked it to my grandmother. Shout out to my grandmother.
What's your grandma say?
She wasn't really all the way paying attention. She was like hot combing her hair. But my niece and my sister there and my lady, we were watching it, and this was like the second time my lady had seen it. This first time my sister had seen it, and my niece, my niece is 15. She didn't even know who Dame Dash was.
Right.
I think I might have been a little tight about that. I was like, he started Rockefeller with Jay-Z. You know, I had to, you got to teach the youth.
Right.
But I did it in a curt manner. I apologize. But we watched it, and you could watch how other people had this like, everybody fell on a different side. I don't know, I don't know about this. I agree with this person here. You know, was he arrogant, whatever. But anyway, long story short, when he kept saying, you got the hat on, you got the hat on. My grandma's like, well, what's up with the hat? What's the hat mean? And it was just, you got to explain. Well, the hat is, his old partner got a new company, and the hat is, that's.
I think it was a little troll in that.
That was crazy. I got to talk, and
he played it real low too. He didn't say too much because it had already jumped off with envy. And he just
what did Dame kept calling Charlamagne?
Oh, Chatty Patty.
Chatty Patty, yeah.
Hashtag Chatty Patty.
Chatty Patty.
Man,
I don't listen to Chatty Patty.
That shit was funny as hell, man.
That was a good moment, man. It was a classic interview, man.
Oh man.
Speaking of good moments, Chatty though. Patty. Woo! What's cracking with this motherfucking To Pimp a Butterfly? Shit.
I didn't listen to it yet.
I heard a couple. I
knew you wasn't.
I heard some tracks off of it, and Classic Black is striking back.
Dog. Man, listen. Man. We got it. Yeah,
I think
that shit is funky. That shit is. I told you my grandma was hot combing her hair. That's Classic Black shit.
That's Classic Black.
Yeah, man, there's a certain thing, That's classic, fish fry that's black.
Classic black.
Yeah.
I think it's a moment for classic black right now. I think new black has brought the classic black out real hard.
Yeah, man.
And it's funny how the new black just, lost the case against classic black in the courts of the law.
Well, I don't know. I think it's an ongoing struggle.
No, I'm talking about with the Marvin Gaye situation.
Oh, okay.
The Prince New Black. You know what I'm saying?
Are you talking about Robin Thicke and
Pharrell. Pharrell coined that New Black thing. Yeah. I mean, I don't know if he coined it, but he was pushing it.
He's a proponent of the New
Black. Yeah, but you know what I'm saying? It's funny that, they were.
That got muddy to me because then I heard that they won, but then I heard that they denied that they were even having the case. I'm still not all the way up to date with that. Lawsuit. The
record industry probably like, listen, let's go ahead and get it off the books.
Yeah.
But back to Pimp a Butterfly. Mm-hmm. So you ain't really.
I heard about four or five tracks. I haven't found a solid, full.
That shit is fire.
You know what I'm saying? Because they had taken it down off of iTunes.
They put it back up though.
Oh, and when I checked it was down.
This nigga shit is like Jordan's. It's limited edition. You can't, they got to resell it. I might have to start, I might have a blanket outside.
I mean,
selling them shits for 15 ounces.
I'll be honest, man. I think I have a disincentive to listening to hip-hop albums lately.
You have an incentive or a disincentive?
I'm dyslexic. I'll be sitting with D in the car, and your D will be like, yo, you got to hear these bars. And it takes me like 3 weeks to process one song. It takes me too long to process a song.
So what do you like listening to? But you like Pun.
I love Pun.
So, I mean.
Pun is one of the fastest rappers.
Puerto Rican.
I love Tupac. But I feel like Pac was my first. I love Pac. But like when guys get too complex with the rhymes, Pac was my first.
Hero. I got a pause on that?
No.
Pac was my first.
Oh, I didn't catch that one.
Pac the Cherry.
Hey, Pac the Cherry.
That's hilarious. He hit him up. Who shot you?
Yeah, Pac can take you through it though. A hero. So you got time. You can't, but like Pun is extremely fast.
But I feel like guys like that, I don't know, I just like when you put the Andre 3000, was Andre or Big Boy?
Yeah.
It's just so loaded and nuanced and context. I give up.
You know what's so funny? I feel the same way about R&B.
Me too.
I can't really hear what they're saying.
I thought I was the only motherfucker in the world who.
No, dog, I be listening to.
I can't make out the words.
No, I know the melody. I don't know that they said all of that they said.
You gotta be taking your time. You know what I'm saying? Like R. Kelly, he real plain with his. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? But you
that's
know,
when Park Slope John Legend starts sounding kind of good.
Yeah, Park Slope John Legend. Nah, that, you, I can't hear what he's saying. We whispering
we're
too
just
much.
Just ordinary people.
I definitely don't know what the fuck D'Angelo's saying.
Oh, D'Angelo don't want nobody to know what he's saying.
I don't even want it. Somebody sent me the link because I was like, yo, I want to know the lyrics to this shit. Somebody sent me a link to the lyrics. And I said, fuck that. I don't even want to know what he's saying. I just want to,
You don't know what he's talking about, but the sound good as
hell. I never knew a lot of R&B words because I couldn't hear them.
Like Jodeci, I know a little bit. So you're having my baby. And it feels so good to me. But after that, I'm like, all right, I got it. That's only, I know it now after damn near 20 years of listening
even
to it
you,
over and over.
Even if you talk about the Marvin Gaye, like, what?
Stand in line.
Is that what he said?
That shit grooving, but I don't know what he talking about.
This shit sound jamming, though. That studio session was the shit.
Man,
that was a good time. You know what I mean?
You
know what
that's when you gotta hit him with the baby, baby. You do that shit. You just gotta feel it. You don't understand what the fuck is going on. You
about to take flight.
Yeah, you hit it with the. Oh,
but you basically you have to infer based on the mood. You have to you kind of have to like I think he's having a good time.
He sound angry.
He sound angry here. I mean,
anger. Right. Leave your sit turn. This little record. He said, leave your sit turn. What the fuck? What does that mean? Anger. Either leave your sit turn. I said, what is that? I don't know where that shit is. That's on the Hear My Dear album. If you know Bob, you know what the fuck I'm talking about.
Teddy Pendergrass was good for letting you hear what he was saying. Yeah. Teddy was good for that. Like, you know.
Nah, but he like the Migos with that shit. He'll have that scream out. Turn him off!
Yeah.
Teddy, and then he'll go by the crooning.
Teddy was a threat. Teddy wanted to fuck your lady.
Yeah, Teddy was he would kiss people in concert live. You ever seen clips of him?
He would have concerts with nothing but women. You couldn't bring your lady. You know he would say it's just lit women only.
Sweaty too, like that performance sweat.
But man. Then leave with a tranny.
Yeah.
Ooh. Well, you know.
He probably wanted to change
it. Turn off the lights. Turn him off. Turn him off. Shit, who knows? Shout out to Teddy B.
I mean, you know, it is. You can't judge him for that. You know what I mean?
Nah, everybody got their thing.
You know,
everybody
wanted something different. You know what I mean?
Miss you, baby. That nigga Teddy used to sing that shit.
He said, you my first, my last, my latest inspiration. He had some ill lines, man.
That motherfucker.
You just showing out now.
No, deeper.
You got quotables, R&B quotables over there.
Teddy Pendergrass. No, but that's, you understand, some guys I don't understand. But that's how I feel about hip hop. I don't know. I give up. I'm like, all right, the beat was hot. But other than that.
Sometimes, though, you got to challenge yourself because it's worth it. It's worth it. It's like, it's some of that shit that's like, it's dense or you might not get it the first time. And then it's just kind of like, sometimes.
But know, I do feel like there's certain guys, I feel like you could, like if you and I listen to a record, right?
Yeah.
I don't know if it's because you're more practiced, but I feel like you'll hear a song and quickly digest the majority of it. Yeah. Me, it's like, I'm like, D, I'm sorry, man.
It's like Spanish. Like, you know what I mean? You speak way better Spanish than Bloomberg.
You saying I don't speak hip hop? What are you trying to say?
You know, it seems like you don't.
Know. Bloomberg Spanish is the worst.
That's what I'm saying. Man. I said he speaks way
disgrace.
Better Spanish.
Oh, hola.
El Huracano.
He's trying, though.
Bienes por aquí, Chipotle, guacamole.
I think sometimes the cool thing about music, though, is it's even more so about the context. You know what I mean? Right. Like, a song could be your favorite song just by how you heard it the first time.
Right.
Where you were, how it was set up, how the drums hit, how everybody else reacted,
right.
How you, okay, you know what I mean? You kind of feel it. And I think this Kendrick album is one of those fucking moments, dog. Right. It's like, you know, Good Kid, Mad City was dope, and it was dense, and it was solid. Mm-hmm. And everybody was like anointing him that guy back then, and I was like, this is a fire album, but you know, there's still some guys out there.
Right,
you know
right,
what I mean?
Right, right, right.
This album here.
What do you think is the impact? The impact of this album in terms of the game.
What is I think this is what got. Well,
is it bringing? Is it bringing real like real layered lyric hip hop back to the game? Is it bringing like what's the impact overall on the game in terms of this album? What do you think?
I mean, you don't know what the impact will be, but I could tell you what he's doing from the stuff that I heard. I mean, from what he's doing, he's trying totally different sounds than what's out there now. He's trying very different approach. He's adding things. He's taking things that they tried in the last album that, you know what I'm saying, that, you know, Dre has been good for his whole career. It's layering in just lifestyle stuff throughout the track that it doesn't even have nothing to do with music. You know what I'm saying? Like, I heard something in the background that was on an Ice Cube album, just somebody yelling in the background. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? And I'm like, that shit from Ice Cube album.
That was for you to hear.
You know what I'm saying? And that was a reference that was so layered down up under it. I'm like, oh shit.
It was an Easter egg.
Yeah, it was an Easter egg. Mm-hmm. Thank you, Kendrick.
But Dre always been good at the
fucking. Dre's going. He's the hip hop producer of the century.
He's Mount Rushmore.
You know what I'm saying? He had NWA. He had, you know what I'm saying, yeah. Cube. He had the Chronic. He got fucking Eminem.
50 Cent.
He got 50. And he got Kendrick. And all of those, what we just named, are culture changing projects and artists. You know what I'm saying? And I think what Kendrick is doing is he's abandoning the pop. You know what I'm saying? The pop way of doing things and doing it just a whole nother way. Not that it's not pop, it just sounds totally different.
Yeah. I think it reminds me of Outkast. Right. And I thought that since the first album with Bitch Don't Kill My Vibe sounded very
Outkast. Right.
But I think he reminds me of Outkast in the way that he's going to challenge everything sonically that's going on. He's not afraid to go in a totally different direction. Right. A lot of these other rappers sound like they shop it with the same producer. You know what I mean? It's damn near
Nothing's
like
on the track.
Yeah, it's like rhythms. You know what I mean? Right, like a reggae. Right. Okay, so now he on that beat.
Everyone dubs.
Exactly, little dubs. But then he gonna come with a whole nother cacophony of sound and it's all types of elements. And then on top of that, he is challenging. I think on the first album, he was kind of speaking for like the youth, the kids like in his position, you know, his predicament. Good Kid, Mad City, the peers, you know what I mean? You don't, you know, when I'm with the homies, I'm doing stupid shit. You don't need to do this stupid shit. Now, I think on this album, he's challenging Black America.
Right.
You know what I mean? To like really love yourself and to like look within and to believe in yourself. And it's a strong album. He's making a strong case. It came at the right time. You know what I mean?
Right.
It's a good one.
It's a good. It fits right in with what's happening. You know what I'm saying? It's a lot going on in classic black. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? D'Angelo album. You know what I'm saying? Funk. What you know what I'm saying? What Kendrick is doing? What you know? A lot of the girls are doing with natural hair. What Shonda Rhimes is doing on TV? It's a lot of conversation. What Dame was talking about as far as, you know what I'm saying, controlling your ownership. I mean,
well,
I
not
think,
even ownership, but even more like working together and not tearing each other down.
Exactly. Because anybody, you worked there. You worked Rockefeller Street Team.
I did. You know I did, saying? Full disclosure. Yeah, and I got to see that shit up close and personal.
You know what I'm saying? And a lot of people, everybody that I know that worked over there, that worked with Dame, he gave all of them, you know what I'm saying, the autonomy to do their own things. You know what I'm saying? A lot of them doing their own shit and have been doing their own shit even when they were working for him because that was the culture. You know, he put people in position.
Yeah.
Like, you know what I'm saying? He probably lost his company to try to put people in position like Cam and all them cats. You know what I'm saying? I mean, that probably was, you know, the straw that broke the camel back with Jay, but it was like he wasn't afraid to put people in position and let them
hustle together. Like he say, Harlem sticks together. He's definitely about that, like inspiring other people to hustle on this block with.
Right. So when he did the DD 172 or whatever, you know what I'm saying? Everybody in there was doing their own shit and doing this shit with them. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You know, so you got cats like Jet Life and all them cats out of there, you know what I mean? That went off to do their own shit, but they were cutting their teeth in there.
Yeah, man.
I'm curious to see what the aftermath is going to be of this album in terms of like how it affects culture and the sensibility of people's ears. You know what I mean? Like what we start.
You won't really see that shit for years to come. Like you could. What I do think is, and I think to open it further than just Kendrick, I think there's Kendrick, there's J. What I feel like right now, especially a lot of people are dropping new albums this month, right?
Mm-hmm.
So Kendrick was supposed to come out on 323, then Action Bronson is coming out 324, I think Wale's coming out 331, something like that. First of all, the fact that I could rattle off three different release dates says something about music right there. That people, there's some anticipation again, right?
Right.
But you look at J. Cole, you look at a Wale, you look at a Bronson, you look at a Kendrick, you look at a Chance the Rapper. It's a whole new generation of new MCs that are relevant to people these people give a fuck about them. You know what I mean? Like the Jay-Z's, they kind of like, they deities. You know what I mean? Like they in the game. They, at this point, they're legacy acts. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? Like they could come out and make some shit but honestly, it's a whole new generation of hip hop, and it is exciting to see the shit. You know what I'm saying? Like, I'm in my 30s, so I'm not a 17-year-old kid that's experiencing some of these. Like, when I was young and I was listening to, like, Outkast for the first time, or when I listened to, you know, even the whole G-Funk era for the first time and all of that, or even, like, the No Limit movement and the Cash Money movement, the Rockefeller movement for the first time, it shaped the way I looked at life, how I approached life. Like he said, with the whole Dame shit, Dame wanted you to have a fucking business. Even if you had a job, you was going somewhere to get incorporated because you was like, fuck that shit, I got to make my own. You know what I mean? It kind of defined, you know, your generation. And you're seeing a whole new generation of rappers that are speaking to this generation behind us. And it's fucking interesting just to watch as a fan of hip-hop culture. You know what I mean? So, you know, I'm curious to see what it is. I do feel like there's a new wave in lyricism, but at the same time, there isn't as much of that whole purist, either you're a lyricist or you're not hip hop.
And
no
I
more.
Think that's good.
Yeah, because I think it's beautiful. It's back to being diverse again.
Right, exactly. Because you got different voices, and it's actually bigger now than if you had the 90s and you had 20 big artists that had albums and they were all different voices. Now you got hundreds of them, you know what I'm saying? And from all different cultures all over the globe, you know what I'm saying? So it's you know, I think it's a great thing. And I think, just specifically to Kendrick, I think he's doing a lot of things as far as he's experimenting more with the BPMs, you know what I'm saying? He's raising up the BPM count a little bit, you know what I'm saying? Experimenting with going faster and a little bit, you know what I'm saying? It's not just such a down tempo like the, you know what I'm saying, the trap music and all that stuff, which, you know what I'm saying, ironically, the BPM counts on music has been down ever since the Chronic. When the Chronic came, that shit slowed everything down. Everybody was like, what the fuck?
Well, it's Bombs Over Baghdad. That was crazy.
Yeah, but, you know, again, Outkast, they challenged everything. That's what we said. Yeah. I'm not saying that it was absolute that everything was down, but overall.
Yeah, it got to that 94 beeps. Yeah.
To this day, that shit is like at 60 BPMs. Yeah. That shit is slow. Like, you know, that trap music is slow. Mm. So, you know what I'm saying? I think what the effect that has is that a kid now that's coming up that's thinking, hey, I want to do some shit. You know what I'm saying? He's not locked in to that one sound, to, well, I'm going to be the next trap rapper. I'm going to be the next, you know what I'm saying, DJ Mustard. It's the producers that's like, well, shit, if they making music like that, I could do that.
That's a new black.
That's you know what I'm saying?
I like the way we even pronounce new black. Like
new black.
New black.
You got to say new black like it's new.
Even the pronunciation. You know what I'm sorry. Like,
yeah, so when you thinking about coming up, you looking at what's out there and what's winning. And to have a sound that's not the same, that's also winning, it affects how the next generation makes their music.
It opens it up. It's like, you know what it reminds me of? It reminds me of like a comedian when it's a comedian that's fucking polarizing. Like when you see Patrice go on stage, you see Corey Holcomb
Doug
go on
Stanhope.
Stage. You know what I'm saying? Doug Stanhope, even Louie. You know what I mean? When they say Chris Rock, when they say shit that like can polarize the room, it just opens up more space for every other comedian to play with. It's like, oh shit, you could say that?
Right.
I bet. You know what I mean? Like it challenges the whole entire culture.
Especially when it comes from a place of honesty.
Yeah.
Because a lot of guys are clever.
Yeah, it's not clever. For shock.
It's a, you know, it's like, oh, this is clever. I played with words. But when someone comes from a place of honesty and it's polarizing, you know.
Because it's just an expression. And it's like, if this is gonna be art, you should be able to express yourself as fully as possible. And when you see somebody do that, it's almost like being like, oh shit, I ain't know we could do that. You know what I mean?
But I mean, as far as you speak to comedy, it's just like when Def Comedy Jam came out. That lets you know, oh shit, we could do jokes like this. We could laugh at our own shit like that and be on TV. That opened up doors for everybody that, you know what I'm saying, was doing comedy just in small pockets to say, you know what, I can take this a whole lot further.
Yeah.
And the danger lies in trying to recreate that, you know, Def Jam, the NWA. Well, I mean,
that's the danger in it being a hustle.
Yeah, right? that's what I'm getting to.
Yeah.
But if that's your brand and that's your legacy, you want to continue it, you want to make it go, but that it doesn't have to have the same social impact as the first. you know what I'm saying, for you to try to, you know, exploit it as a business.
That's what ends up happening. Exactly. That's what see that and go, oh, I could do that hustle as opposed to seeing and being inspired by it.
But that's there's a thin line, but there's a difference in the approach. Because it's like if you approach it as a craft, you'll always respect it as a craft. If you approach it as a hustle, you're going to approach it as a hustle. You're going to look at it as a hustle. So it's a look at it as a way to come up.
The timing is different. You know what I'm saying? Like if Def Comedy came back as, you know what I'm saying, something different as it relates to what Thomas is, then it would be maybe different. But that would take you respecting it and looking at it from a point of culture as a point of, let me just exploit my brand.
Yeah, and just to be clear, I'm not making it specific to Def Comedy Jam at all. What I'm saying is, it's like, I always use this analogy. It's like when you seen LL make, when I'm alone in my room. And, you know, I need love, right?
You know that shit.
You know?
I do know that.
It was almost R&B, though.
It was borderline.
But when he did that, it was so different from damn near everything else on the radio that was way more aggressive, right?
Right, right.
And then that kind of birthed the whole, the girl record.
You had to make a girl record.
You had to make a girl record.
You had to lick your lips on a rap video.
And there's certain dudes that could do that shit effortlessly because they
take
really,
your shirt off.
Yeah, they into it. They make shit for the women. They know that, you know what I mean? And then there's other motherfuckers that's like, I need a girl record to get on the fucking radio.
That's
my point.
Nobody changed that shit more than Pac.
That's what I'm saying, yeah.
Pac made all, he had my dead homie record. He had, you know what I'm saying? He had a whole list of genre records that everybody felt like they had to put on their record. I need a homie record. I need a girl record. I need my club record.
Well, I'm going to say, I got the same argument for
I need
Big.
An after right. death record.
Because I feel like, I think Life After Death changed the way cats was making rap records for at least 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
It was that whole, especially New York cats.
Right.
It was that whole, all right, I need my primo beat, you know what I mean? Then I need my down south shit.
Collaboration.
You know what I'm saying? Then I need my shiny shit, you know what I mean? The club record. Then got to do the one with at least Too Short. Again, that, you know what I mean?
Right.
Like it was
West Coast.
The West
you know
Coast
saying?
Joint.
Gangster-esque.
Salute to my West Coast region. Salute to the South. You know, it was interesting how, like, if you listen to Life After Death, then you listen to, like, Life of Times of Sean Carter, Volume 1, it was kind of a condensed version.
Oh, yeah, definitely,
version,
definitely,
you know
definitely, definitely.
And it was a lot of other people doing that, but I could just push that out.
How much of that is also, and Ali, you brought this point up before, how much of that album structure is based on the fact that this is pre- iTunes and pre, like, well, you could actually put an album out. Like, an album meant something. People
would
buy it.
Yeah, but that's just the variety of songs. Now, you could put out the one kind of song that everybody fucking with, and I could have my DJ Mustard type of song and get in the clubs. I need my strip club song and my club song and shit.
But it's also, too, I don't think iTunes has really changed much. It definitely opened it up to the singles market again. Like, you could sell singles and you could get shit popping. But if you are a dope artist,
people will go look for you.
That could put together an album. Like Kendrick, I didn't really want to listen to too many of the songs outside of the album. I'd rather hear it all in this.
All together.
Exactly. Certain people, I'd rather just hear the latest single. Mm-hmm. But it's similar to, like, to make that equation again, like, there's certain comedians you like to see for 15 minutes, and there's those that you could watch for a whole hour.
There's a lot of those, yeah.
Because they could say a whole lot of shit within that hour. They
pacing,
could take you on a ride.
Engagement,
yeah.
You know what I mean?
There's other cats that just, they punchy, and it's, you 70 know.
Minutes.
And, yeah. And then, but the thing about it, one thing I learned from just, you know what I'm saying, working in music and shit is there's everybody that likes everything.
Yeah.
There's somebody that likes everything. You know what I'm saying? And an artist's job or a record label's job is to find that artist, that audience for said particular artist. So it's somebody that likes, you know what I'm saying, the rapper that you hate, they love that whole album, you know what I'm saying, and you like, what the fuck, you can't listen
to
one song.
I don't get it. Yeah, yeah.
So it's people out there that just, you know what I mean, it's all kind of perspectives, and I think the album is for when you really want to get into that artist's perspective.
Yeah,
I think the critical thing is, and I think this is the point you were trying to make with the Biggie album,
mm-hmm.
is that a lot of guys, what they'll start doing is they'll either start doing what's hot, or they'll start doing the opposite of that.
Right.
As opposed to embracing a full range of being an artist. Like, I'm going to take what Biggie did. I'm going to take what Def Jam Comedy did.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to take all that and have it inform what I'm doing, mm-hmm. as opposed to being like, oh, that's what's hot. Let me jump on that. Or I don't like that. I'm going to do the opposite.
Or just doing what I want to do. Because that's the purest form of it right then.
It's like,
this is what I feel like doing. Because it comes down to expression. So it's like, if you're an artist and you get to that studio, you express how you feel in that moment. You like, yo, I feel like making a fucking like a turn up record.
I love record. Yeah, whatever it is. Yeah,
or whatever. Like, I'm in that moment right now, and I need to express that fully. So at that point, it's potent. It's palpable. You'd be like, yo, that motherfucker really meant that shit. Mm-hmm. Not that. Okay, I think it's time for me to. Let me source some of these records of that type, and I'll figure something
out.
Can
we get Hit-Boy on the phone?
Yes.
Because a lot of, you know, we've been in situations where a lot of comics will be like, you know, mainstream versus urban rooms, right? Uh-huh. And they'll play either one based on whatever they feel like. You know, they don't really accept my style. And it's like, you got to kind of embrace the best of both and have it informed. Like, don't, you know, a lot of guys are oppositional. Mm-hmm. They define who they are by what they're not. We always talk about this. It's like, how do you take that without jumping on the bandwagon, but just incorporating it into what you do as a form of full expression?
It's just being yourself.
Yeah.
Because that's the only constant in the formula. It's like, this crowd is different from that crowd. You're going in both of these crowds, but you're the same guy.
And how
so
do you,
just be the same guy each time.
Be human the whole way.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You ain't got a lot to kick it, my nigga. So. You ain't got a lot. That shit hard, boy.
I'll try listening to the Kendrick album. I'll try.
That shit is
you
something.
You ain't got to.
I'll try. I'll pull up lyrics.com.
You don't have to.
Yeah, man.
Because to me, it feels like a victory. Oh, that's what he was saying. Oh, I got it now.
And then that should be wrong. Then the motherfucker.
I know. Then I come to y'all like, he wasn't saying that.
I didn't say that shit.
Guns were not involved.
Yeah, I think a nigga thought I was in a gang last week. I'll tell you a full quick story. I was at the Comedy Cellar, right? I was chilling.
Excuse me. And, dropping venues now.
I was at the Comedy Cellar.
I'm messing with you, D.
I see one cat that I knew. He was one of the, like, a security guy or shit. I said, what's popping? You know, I said to him, there's another cat behind him. You know what I mean? Young cat, probably like 25 or whatever. He heard me. He was like, what's popping? Then gave me a pound wild aggressive, holding my hand. Like, I was like, what's good? What's popping? He was like, yo, I'm 8, whatever his name is, from Brooklyn. You know what I mean? I said, all right, you real hostile right now. You know, we still holding hands and shit. And I'm like, all right, my dude.
You're supposed to know his G code.
Exactly.
You're supposed to know his G
exactly. I ain't here. So I was like, he was like, yeah, I like what you're doing on Geico, man. Keep doing your thing. And then he left, right?
Yes, that's
and it was
hood
a
love.
Weird moment. Because then I'm like, is it hood love? Is it where nigga would give you props, but they don't want to, in the moment of giving you props, they don't want to be less than. You right. know what I mean?
No, most definitely.
You know what I'm saying? I mean, that's listen, what, my nigga, I got to let you know you doing your thing. You know what I'm saying? You know, I'm doing me, but you doing you. You know
right,
what I mean?
Right.
But then I was like, later on, because I had it happen before, a long time ago, a friend of mine, he had just come home from jail. And I, you know, I say it in a whimsical fashion. I am not gang related for the record. Never been. I am not gang related. I remember New York City before there was Bloods and Crips. So I'm looking at it as a, hey, what's popping? You know what I mean? I asked my.
What's popping?
What's popping? It's some blood shit.
Oh, really?
See, I didn't know that because my slang is outdated. Right, I'm not out there running around. I'm a grown ass man.
Got caught out there.
Right. But it was a cat that was a couple years older than me, fresh out of jail. I said, what's popping? He was like, what's banging? I said, whoa, all right. Well, listen, my nigga, we both in our 30s. Like, let's be careful here.
You know, he's a preserved 30. Like,
oh, yeah.
How long was he in there?
Exactly.
He's preserved.
But I just want to make an announcement. You know what I mean? I'm changing what's popping to either what's shaking or to hello, how are you doing? I'm Damien.
I had to change.
Pleasure to meet you.
I had an experience like that.
First shaking.
First time I went to the West Coast.
Yeah.
And you know my
shaking.
Miami,
please
you know
don't
what I'm saying?
Say that, D.
Like, you know, cuz, like you say, what's up, cuz? Like,
yeah,
it ain't shit. Like, you know, we ain't had no gangs and no shit like that.
Yeah.
So I'm on the West Coast and it was a Gavin conference. Uh-huh. Shout out to Tim Bisa. And
Gavin, like
the Death Row cast was there, like, yeah. You know what I'm saying? OFTB, I think they was called. It's like a gang, very gang related group that probably never had a record, but they was on the label.
Uh-huh.
On the label.
Okay.
So I'm at the table, we sitting around, and I'm like, yeah, shit, what up, cuz? You know what I mean? Blah, blah, blah.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and then I said it probably like 3 times in the matter of this conversation.
Kept repeating it.
He was like, yo, man, where you from?
Uh-huh.
I was like, I'm from Miami. Because I had braids at the time. Uh-huh. I was like, I'm from Miami. He's like, oh, man, you know what I'm saying? Because, you know, you saying cuz a lot, you know what I'm saying? Around here, that's kind of like, you know what I'm saying? That's some Crip shit.
And yeah.
I'm like, oh, shit. Nah, my bad.
My bad.
I don't know shit about what you're talking about.
Excuse me, cuz. Sorry, cuz. I didn't mean to offend.
I was like, okay.
Yeah, sometimes you gotta know.
That's when the language come into play for
Absolutely.
Real.
That's so funny.
That's when language mean, you know what I'm saying?
That's when you need a hood Sherpa. Like, listen, my nigga, don't speak like that around here. Them motherfuckers, and fix your hat.
Motherfuckers. Oh, they shoot you in Chicago, right?
Go to Chicago with your shit cocked all wrong. And I'm very nonchalant with my hat. Like, yeah. It might go on whatever way it lands. So you don't want to be in Chicago fucking up.
Yeah, not by mistake.
Do you? This sounds crazy, but I mean, I you know, when I travel a lot, I actually have a basic hat, no label on, no brand, it's a straight up black hat.
Yeah, I see it.
Because some cats are just
nondescript. Like
that might be a G
character.
Hat too.
You All never black. Know.
You can't
you
win.
You never know.
You can't win.
Oh, he got a solid black hat.
Oh shit! That was
you had to look for a solid.
I was
black
in
hat.
Boston. I was in Boston for graduation. I had my Yankee hat on. I just totally forgot. I totally blanked out.
Oh, that's a gang too.
And dude, everybody would stop me. Like, these are professors on the campus. Yeah. They were like, "You have a Yankee hat on?"
They worse than a gang. Yeah. They like zealots.
So I was like, you know what? Whenever I leave, I'm gonna wear just a basic black hat.
Ah, speaking of when you leave, where you gonna be at this week?
Oh, we wrapping up?
Yeah.
Oh man.
King of the rap. This sir rap.
Man, I'm at the Broadway. I'm at the Broadway Comedy Club tonight, because when this thing airs tonight, and then I'm in Long Island City Saturday at the Laughing Devil. Then I'm at the Stand Saturday and Sunday, and then laughingblad.com. Check it out for dates. I'm coming to Penn State Harrisburg in a week or so. April 7th, I'm out there. Got a sketch coming out. We're going to put that out there. Taping it. We're getting the pieces in motion. I'm gonna let it fly. I'll put it in the conversation post. Yeah. Oh, I just taped live at Gotham Comedy Live.
Shout out to that. It was on Access.
It was on Access TV.
Is it on, it's What's online up? Anywhere people can see it?
I don't think it's up yet. Okay. They're still putting the footage together. I don't think it's up yet. But they do air it on the channel.
All right.
That's what's up.
There you go.
Bird.
Muhammad, what's cracking?
Ah, man, we in production on a series that's going to drop on the web pretty soon. Shout out to everybody who came out last weekend. You know, follow Lolita on Instagram. And
follow Lolita? She's
Evita, you know what I'm saying, from No Madness. And Lloyd Porter and, you know, the other people that participated in it. And we'll be back this weekend shooting again. So that'll be dropping real soon.
All right. That's what's up. Shit, I'll be at the Stand tonight. Oh, actually, I won't be at the Stand tonight. I'm sorry. I'll be at the Stand tomorrow night. You know what I mean? Also be there Friday, Saturday. I'll be at the Cellar Saturday night and back at the Stand on Sunday. So everything else, you can follow me online, D Lemon Comedy everywhere. As always, tell a friend to get
subscribe.
In the conversation.
Subscribe.
We out.